And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Quick question for you. What's your bright spot today?
Well, my bright spot for today is kind of trying to make peace with a fruit.
Okay.
Are we
getting back to grapefruit?
No, it's another fruit that I've disparaged quite a bit in the recent days on this show, particularly as it relates to the year of the seltzer. I've said some really negative things about coconut.
Yes, you have. That's true.
And I've always tried to stay diplomatic on this topic, that I don't hate the coconut.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it as a seltzer.
Like, sure.
It's just a disgusting flavor for liquids.
Right.
So I want to take this opportunity to say something positive about coconuts that I have recently encountered in life. I have been exploring various, I told you I have been having like oat milk. I've recently discovered that there's also other kinds of yogurt. Didn't know that necessarily.
There
were
that
non-milk yogurts.
That sounds
so there's
crazy.
A coconut milk yogurt.
Okay.
Fantastic.
All right.
I enjoy it.
Coconut milk yogurt.
Does the trick.
I just don't. Wait, isn't
it's
yogurt.
It's basically yogurt, but then
yogurt
it's got a little
curdled,
bit of a coconut thing
isn't
to
yogurt
it.
Curdled milk, though? Isn't the definition of
am
yogurt?
Am I a scientist?
That's fair.
Am I a milk scientist?
You're not.
Look
you're
at
not.
Me, Jordan. Am I a milk scientist?
Yeah, I don't
you
know.
You answer me that one question.
You're the one who knows more about milks than me.
I paid a dollar at the store and I got one. I ate it and it tasted okay.
Yeah, but you're a researcher. You look
not
into
about
things,
yogurts.
Dan. Why not?
That's a good question, actually. We've now reached the point where I'm like, yay, I can't agree with you. There should be there's some expectation that I would look into it. I just haven't. I've just been trying. And honestly, I want to be totally clear about this. I don't know if it's healthier. I don't know if it's healthier than like a Greek yogurt or just a Danon.
Sure.
But it's pretty good. I enjoy it. I'm just trying to diversify the offerings that I have, the food offerings in my life. And so
I'm looking forward to 2022 whenever we hear the drop. Yogurt. All right. This is the year of yogurt again.
There won't be a year of the yogurt.
Still going.
Nope. It turns out there will be another year of the seltzer in a couple years.
Sure.
I just like seltzer. It's delicious.
You like seltzer.
I have no updates on that front, but I would like to know what your bright spot is.
My bright spot is the comedian David O'Doherty, Dan. Mm.
You might have overpronounced that name.
David O'Doherty, Dan. You pronounce it right.
Okay.
No, I haven't. And particularly enjoyed a lot of stand-up that's been released recently.
Sure.
So went back and watched some old David O'Doherty specials, and he's fantastic. Mm. Musical comedian, tiny little keyboard, little Casio keyboard, terrible singing voice.
Oh, boy.
Incredible songwriter.
I might have to look into this because the way you describe it sounds pretty rough.
No, he's amazing.
Okay.
He's very, very good. All in a genuinely funny kind of dark, miserable kind of way.
I'm not aware of him, although you did drag me to see another European comedian at the Athenaeum Theater.
Dylan Morn.
No offense to that guy, but I did not have a great time.
You know what I found? A lot of people don't make it to 5 specials, and those who do probably shouldn't. Let's be real about that.
I just remember getting pissed off because the bar had closed
that's right
with like half an hour left in the show. I had walked out to like get another drink because I wasn't enjoying myself.
The last half hour was you just seething. Me turning over and looking after a kind of half-hearted laugh.
I demand more like, Merlot.
Anything. Yeah. Is there anything here for you? No, not even Merlot? Fine.
I didn't hold it against you, although
personally,
it was one of the lower points of our friendship. Because I remember,
that's true.
I remember that we went to that because your now partner didn't want to go.
No. That was a different. It was a different
setup
person
of
who,
it.
No,
oh,
different
no,
person.
That's right.
Out.
That's right. There was a previous relationship.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
My timeline's a little screwy, but
not to worry.
So, Jordan, today we've got actually what is going to be, what I would describe as a very special episode of our podcast.
All right.
And I don't understand
we're
exactly
learn about drugs.
I'll tell you something about drugs.
Okay.
Stay away from it.
Okay.
Just say no.
Okay.
It's the best policy.
Thanks. Thanks, Nancy.
Learned that from my DARE program. Did you have a DARE program?
Oh, totally.
Did you have a DARE bear?
No. What?
Okay.
A DARE bear?
I don't know if this was just something that my school had, but we had a DARE bear.
Okay.
That went along with the DARE curriculum.
Was it like a care bear with just education. Like D, with DARE on
more
the,
or less,
the
yeah,
stomach and
bear.
Shot DARE love?
Yeah, and if you did really well in the drug education section of the curriculum or whatever, they'd let you take it home for the evening and then you had to bring it back.
That stopped
I
a lot of...
I thought that was universal.
No. Never heard of a DARE bear
well,
in my life.
I guess we'll probably hear from some listeners whether or not they had DARE bears.
Nope, we just had an incompetent city cop and his massive dog.
I think we might have had a similar, some overlap on that front. I think it was around the time that Care Bears was a cartoon.
Sure, sure.
So that might have been part of why that ended up happening.
Any rhyme is worth going for at least once.
Sure, but that's not what's going to make this special. It's not an after-school special.
Right.
And I don't actually know exactly how the structure of this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really planned this out incredibly well in advance.
Okay.
But we will see. What we're going to do is I'm going to give some shout-outs to some folks who have signed up and are supporting the show.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
Then I'm going to open up the mailbag.
Okay.
Then we're going to play a drop of the Andy in Kansas.
Sure.
And then we are going to enter a time capsule episode that we're recording for a listener's child.
Oh, that's great.
For them to listen to in the future. The child is at this point too young to listen to this
show. How old?
I believe six.
Six?
Too young
six?
To listen to Knowledge Fight.
I don't know. You start him young.
However, this gentleman, Robert, reached out to me and wanted to create a time capsule of the day that his daughter was born for when she's old enough to listen to the show so she could hear what Alex was doing on the day she was born.
I want to go fuck, Dad. Why are you making me listen to this?
I got this email, and I thought it was one of the sweeter, more uplifting things that I've heard in a while, although twisted and obscured through the lens of our show, which is never sweet nor uplifting.
Yeah, that's very strange.
And so I definitely, you know, I got this request, and I said, yes, absolutely, this is something that we would love to do, to insinuate ourselves in some sort of a weird memory for your family in the future.
Yeah.
Very weird.
I want to get that letter.
Sure.
I want to get that post-apocalyptic letter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Should we all be around at that point?
Right.
You might want to download this and put this on a thumb drive now, in case the internet goes out by the time.
Make it a vinyl, okay? You want a physical copy of this. The cloud is going down.
Send it into space.
The cloud is going down.
You may want to pay somebody to transcribe this into rock. Just chisel it into a stone.
We do have a cuneiform Knowledge Fight specialist. It is kind of strange, yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, I think this might be a dual time capsule in the sense that we're recording this in July 2020.
Right.
And also it will be a time capsule of December 17th, 2013, the day of Robert's child's birth.
Love it.
So we're going to do that. But I wanted to try, I don't know why, because we're already talking about this and this is an episode. But the way I conceived of it in my mind is that we would play that drop and then we would enter it as if, you know, like that's the beginning of the episode.
Okay.
But only because I was like, I don't know if this was a time capsule episode. Do they need to hear the donors? is that somehow? I just don't know. I don't know how this works. So anyway, if you.
Okay. All right.
So let's get down to business.
I love this.
So first, Justin A. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Justin.
Next, Joe W. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Next, Spiggy. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Spiggy.
Thanks, Spiggy. Next, Cage, spelled with a K. K-A-G-E. Mm-hmm. Last initial H. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Cage.
Next, Emily M. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you. Next, Joseph R. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Joseph.
Then Andrew S. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Andrew.
And finally, I'd like to say thank you to a couple people donated on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, Kyle D. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Beard Beardsley, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
And because in the future, you may listen to this preemptively, though you're too young to understand what it means right now.
Sure.
Robert, his child, V, you are officially a Raptor princess.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
I'll barbecue your ass.
It's over for humanity.
You're a beautiful soul. They're coming for your balls. Well, I piss all over your god. Very few people crap in the pool unless they're babies. I piss all over the state.
You make it a practice of calling people pieces of garbage?
When they are.
Come it, as you see fit.
Thank you all. All right, so Jordan, let's get to the mailbag.
All right. Zip. All right. Hold on.
Zip.
Are you telling me you're going to let her miss that it was Beard Beardsley's shout out on this episode? She's going to just start at the next part? Come on. She's got to know Beard Beardsley was here.
But see, I'm too confused. Like, I assume that everyone, like, down the road, 10 years from now or whatever, sure, they'll be listening to this part where we're doing this rambling introduction,
naturally,
too.
Naturally, as
which
we
is why
do.
I threw in the Raptor Princess shout out just
course.
In case.
Of course.
But I want to give options in case you want to cut it off. Sure. That's why. Okay. This is an instance of I don't know what I'm doing.
I know. I love it. I'm having fun. I'm not criticizing you in a negative way. And this is fantastic.
And I'm not having a terrible time either, okay, although I am flummoxed. So, zip.
Uh-huh.
Here's the mailbag.
Here we go.
I'd like to say thank you to Bob Hartzell of the Au Gratin Press. Sent a nice little package. Hard to call it little, because there were a ton of prints in there.
Yeah.
Of cool posters for shows. A lot of
very
venues,
cool, yeah.
A lot of venues around Central Missouri, too. So there's a lot of stuff from like Mojo's and the Blue Note, which are places that I frequented, and that as well as like some cool Fireside Bowl prints.
Totally, yeah.
Just great art, and you can find his work over on Etsy at the Au Gratin Press. There's some places you can find his work. You should check it out. It all looks really great. I think it's hard to say for sure, because there's no year on it, but I think I was at one of the shows that one of these posters.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the Decemberist show that there's a poster of, I was at. Although that's hard to say for sure, because I would have had to have been over a decade ago.
Yeah.
So, but if
it
was.
When the Decemberists were popular? Boom.
I didn't.
Hold on one second.
It wasn't
second.
Even my choice to go to that show. I got dragged along to it. I had no idea who the Decemberists were.
Yeah.
And it
you
was
weren't
fine.
Missing much.
No, it was a fine show. I had a good time. But yeah, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it. I'll get, I don't know which of these will make it on the wall, but, I know you, took a shining to the Flaming Lips poster.
Yes.
You're
oh,
a big Flaming
good.
Lips fan.
I'm a big Flaming Lips fan.
You like to battle pink robots?
I do love battling pink robots. I appreciate Vaseline in all its many forms.
Did you ever, do that thing where you get a bunch of copies of Zyurika and then you try and play it at the same time?
My friends did.
You don't really like the Flaming
I
Lips
had
then.
No interest in messing around with
we
that.
We tried that.
I heard about that in my first reaction was like, good on you, fellas. And if anybody listens, good on them.
We did it, and I don't know if it was better or not. I was really high.
Yeah.
See, I told you we were going to talk about drugs.
When I was 17, my then girlfriend was on stage with the Flaming Lips at Lollapalooza.
She was playing the sax.
They invite people up there. She was dressed as an alien. Sax. She did not play the sax. She was not a good saxophone player. She was a pianist, actually. Mm. So.
A little tiny piano, like
a little
Irish,
David O'Doherty. Yeah.
All right, Jordan.
Yes, sir.
It's time.
Okay.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hello from the past.
Yes.
Hello, we are recording this in July 2020, where things are bleak.
Yes, if you are listening, please make sure that you do not let the fire go out. We don't know how to restart them anymore.
Keep the fire burning tonight. Kenny Loggins. Great song.
Always.
We are recording this in 2020, where the world is a disaster, and we certainly hope that things are better when this time capsule will be appropriate to open, although I do have a keen awareness that there are a lot of people who are just listening to this on Wednesday in 2020, and they're not loving.
I just want to say congratulations to Martin Luther King Jr.'s granddaughter on becoming president.
We do know that the time travelers have told us that.
Yep.
We have no confirmation of it yet, but you will know in the future.
Of course.
So, like I said, Robert reached out to me and requested that we record this episode for his daughter, V, who was born on December 17th, 2013. And in honor of that, I have gone back and collected clips and listened to an episode of Alex Jones's from December 13th, 2017. I'm sorry.
2013?
2013. Yes. To give a full idea of what he was up to on the day of V's birth.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. And you know what? Hey, you know, you don't get to choose. You don't choose your birthday. And
I'll tell you right now, if anybody was born on this day, they better hope. They better hope that they live to see the end of it.
Sometimes, you know, we've experienced this in the past. Mm. Like, sometimes you choose a random day in Alex's past, sure. And it'll be like, well, this is a humdinger.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is a bad or uninteresting episode, mm-hmm. but I will say that there is very little geopolitical importance on this episode of his show.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah, it's not a day where Alex is, like, really batting on all cylinders,
right.
If you allow me to mix metaphors.
Sure.
So here, though, is an out-of-context drop from today's show.
When the TSA is playing ping pong with your huevos, you're in tyranny.
Yeah. Sort of a Jeff Foxworthy kind of thing.
That's
if the
nice.
TSA is playing ping pong with your testicles,
if the TSA,
you just might be in a tyranny.
You just might be in a fascist.
Or it could go the other way, where it's like, when the TSA plays ping pong with your balls, that's a tyranny. I couldn't decide which way it went, but could be either.
All right.
So we start off this episode, and like, I got really excited just from the jump. Mm-hmm. Like, when I heard, there's an interesting thing. Alex's show is very, very different mm-hmm. in 2013 from yes. what it is in the day that, as we were recording this in 2020. And that is like, Alex has a lot more focus. Mm-hmm. He is like, clearly has at least some idea of what he wants to do on his show.
Okay.
He does like a maybe couple minute, like, mm-hmm. here's what's coming up on today's show. Here are the guests.
Yeah. And I'm actually kind of excited to listen to this. We've been listening to Dirt Alex for so long.
Yeah, yeah. And especially in the present day, like I was listening to Monday's mm-hmm. Episode from, you know, here in July 2020.
Sure.
And it was just depressing. It was just like, it's still just an extension of the, like, I can't even do anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm glad to have this retreat to go sure. back to talk about. But in his preamble, talking about what's coming up on the show, I was like, oh God, so good.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up later in the broadcast, this live Tuesday, the 17th of December, 2013 edition, Larry Klayman, the legendary constitutional lawyer that's
of course
waged war on tyrants everywhere. He is going to be joining us.
Alex is so excited to promote that Larry Klayman's coming up on the show. For some context, Larry Klayman is currently suing Alex. The two of them are in a blood feud about Alex and Roger Stone slandering Larry Klayman and his associate, Jerome Corsi, former InfoWars employee. So the two of them do not like each other anymore. Larry Klayman has become a bit, I mean, he was a punchline back then, too, but sure. even to Alex, he is now sure. just kind of a guy's a dick.
Oh, how things change. You know, it's always
what a hero.
So many things we see where it's like, oh, this is the same shit that's been going on since the 80s. Mm. This is good to know that some friendships do crumble hilariously.
I don't even know this is a friendship, though. Yeah. Like, this is just like a convenience. This is just an association of convenience.
That's fair.
And there's a lot of stuff like that that I see, like looking at this episode in particular, especially as like a bottle episode. There's like, ooh, Alex likes Larry back then. Oh, this guy was around. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's like, oh my God, that is.
Yeah.
Things are very different.
We're tourists in the past now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So Alex, in his like amping up what's coming up on today's show, he does say this, and I will say this is not something he follows through with.
And, of course, as I said, open phones. And I'll open the phones up again today. But I think it's going to be on specific topics because I really want to get your take on some of these issues we're going to be breaking down after the break.
We don't really get to calls. And also, if you have open phones, but it's only on certain topics, it's no longer open phones.
It's not really open phones.
You have contradicted yourself.
We have closed phones.
Right. But it is still like, I think he says that at the beginning of every show back at this point.
We're going to have open phones, right. but it's only talk about this.
Well, or even just saying you're going to have open phones. It seems like something you would say on a talk show at this, you know, of this sort.
Yeah.
In 2013. You're like, we're going to talk to people. And then if you get to it, you get to it. If you don't, right. you don't.
Well, I mean, the point being, people are going to be like, when's my chance to call? So they're going to listen through the point to where somebody's going to say it's his turn to call.
Right.
Right.
It's a good it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So Alex jumps into the stories, and here's where he decides to begin.
Now, where to begin when we come back? There is so much to cover here. So much to go over here. How about
some things
corporate
don't
socialism?
Change.
General Motors says no way it will pay back $10 billion bailout, money it used to move to China and Brazil. You don't just pay to bail it out. You pay to have it leave the country. Only in America. And if you don't like it, you're a conspiracy theorist and a racist.
So, yeah, it is. It is interesting. You know, Alex does have the, like, there's so many stories to get to.
Of course.
That is very similar. But in this case, he does at least start talking about a headline.
That's true. That's true.
So for what it's worth, in July 2019, GM finally finished paying back to the United States government all the money that it owed as part of the bailout. That was later than it was supposed to have paid it all back, but all $6.7 billion that was considered a loan was repaid. The government, and by extension, the taxpayers, did still lose out here, though, because part of the bailout plan was to not saddle the company with an impossible amount of debt, so some of the bailout was in the form of the U.S. government buying stock in General Motors. According to a 2014 article in CNN Business, quote, although GM has been very profitable since 2009, its stock price never rose to the level that let Treasury recoup that investment.
Of course.
On December 16th, back in 2013, there was an article in the Detroit Free Press with the headline, quote, should GM repay $10 billion rescue cost? CEO says no.
Ha! Surprise!
This article is about whether or not the CEO of GM felt they should pay off the government for all the stock that it bought in GM, which technically is not their responsibility and wasn't part of the bailout plan. Naturally, the CEO said no, and that, quote, Treasury officials took the same risk assumed by anyone who purchases stock. Also, Alex fails to mention that in this article, they explicitly discuss GM's plan to invest $1.2 billion in five U.S. plants, which brings their total for the past 4 years at that point up to $10 billion investments in United States plants.
Sure.
Alex is saying that they're moving to Brazil and China, but there are only three GM factories in Brazil, and all of them were opened before the bailout, two of them prior to 1960. As for the reality of Chinese GM factories, they've been built because of the expanding demand for cars in China. A 2019 article in CNN Business estimates that approximately 1% of U.S. GM sales are from cars imported from Chinese factories and, quote, do not have any impact on U.S. factories. There are car plants in China because people in China need cars, and it's way more profitable to not have to transport big-ass cars across the world just to sell them.
Yeah, that is smart.
There are definitely things that you should and can take issue with about the GM bailout, but from everything I can tell, Alex just read this headline about the CEO saying he wasn't going to pay back money that wasn't a loan, and he's making stuff up about the rest.
Sure.
Like, he's just getting wrong. He's getting mad about stuff that doesn't make sense when there's other things to get mad at.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do not appreciate the CEO's tone of like, hey, we just saved your entire fucking business. We could have let you go bankrupt. We could have saddled you with all this debt, but we're not a goddamn venture capital fund. And then you're going to come back and be like, hey, man, you guys did the same shit everybody else did. No big deal. That's kind of a big, I'll see you in hell, you dickbag. Like, I don't know what to say.
If part of the arrangement in advance was that they would buy back the stock for the amount that it was sold for or whatever, and they would pay back everything, then yeah, I would think it was a dick move. But per the terms...
Oh, no, totally.
Right. I mean,
they can't compel them by any stretch. It's still a dick tone to take.
Sure. You would love for them to do it out of the goodness of their heart and their love for America.
You would never expect that to happen, ever.
Probably not.
But it would be nice.
So Alex gets to another story, and it's pretty like a headline intensive towards the beginning of the episode. That does not continue. But here's the next one.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, even mainstream media is calling it the rise of Google's robot army. The rise of the machines. Google search and destroy, rise of the robot animals, as they've now bought four in the last week, and now four more, so eight robot companies in the last week, as Google makes the executive decision to literally buy up almost all serious humanoid or animal-type combat-capable in the future robot systems.
Freak out!
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of clauses that he kept adding to
certainly,
that.
Certainly yeah. a lot of yeah. words.
A lot of words.
Yep. So Google's getting a robot army together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's still coming.
Yep.
I don't doubt that.
And it is going to look really embarrassing if, like, down the road when this time capsule is opened, Google's robots have taken over
oh,
the world.
Oh, man. That'd be a real bummer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Black Mirror episode.
Then we're going to sound like assholes for critiquing
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So once again, this is easily traceable to a headline from December 16th. Mm-hmm. One of the things I thought was really interesting is, like, going through this and, like, hearing the stories that he's covering, it's painfully easy to just go and find the exact article he's talking about.
Yeah.
Like with the last one, the GM article, like that was really easy to find. Sure. Like, oh, here's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And the same thing with this. It's just, this is a CBS News article with the headline, quote, Google buys 8 robotics companies in 6 months. Why? This article is primarily about Google buying a company called Boston Dynamics, which grew out of a project at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Sure.
A lot of these investments could easily be understood as Google trying to get in the early stages of technologies that could be used for an almost mind-boggling array of purposes, mostly in the field of automation.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it from that angle, there's nothing even close to strange about Google buying up these businesses. The robotics section of Google was being handled by a guy named Andy Rubin, who left Google in 2014. According to sources who spoke with Vox in 2017, this, quote, left a number of the companies without much direction about what their role at Google would be. So it should probably be no huge surprise that in 2017, Google sold Boston Dynamics, as well as their other large robotics interests, Shaft, to a Japanese company called SoftBank. The robotics companies were part of Google X, which is their developmental wing. They saw large potential in these companies, but after the guy who was running them left, things got a little rudderless, and they started to realize that the innovations that were being worked on were too far away from being profitable, so they sold them off.
Yeah, they had already built the Rosie the Robot made with the Google insignia on it, so then they had to get rid of those, and that's why in the Jetsons you don't see them.
Sure. Yeah,
that's what makes sense to me.
That's what I saw in the white papers.
That's the only thing I can see.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say that those videos of, like, galloping robots don't terrify
me. They're great. No, they're fantastic.
I'm not trying to downplay that. We should probably shoot all of those on site.
I don't know how many times we have to
look,
have
I love
movie.
Horizon Zero Dawn, so listen. I know that I'm going to need to invest in a bow and arrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How many times are we going to have a movie say the answer is, they asked themselves whether or not they could, not whether or not they should. And then we watch it in reality happen. And we're like, guys, have you seen any movies about you? About you. They're about you. Look at you building a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
You're terrifying.
It's not predictive programming. It's a common artistic theme about hubris.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we won't make these mistakes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So the sense that I get from reading up on Google's foray into the field of robotics is that it was kind of a mixed experience. On the one hand, some people accuse Google of holding the field back by spending big bucks to hire some of the brightest minds in robotics into their research divisions where they weren't being used to their full potential, and therefore, like, innovations were held back that could have been maybe done outside of the restrictive purview of Google. And then others point out the fact that because Google showed such a huge interest in robotics back in 2013, it led to other firms viewing robotics as a field worth investing in, and so it actually pushed the field forward. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, nobody has a complete handle on what the net gain or loss is. We just know that there's some gain, there's some loss.
It seems like a lot of the sense that I was getting was kind of stifling.
Yeah,
it was a lot of the feeling that some people had in hindsight. But I'm not, I guess another thing is I'm not in that field nearly enough or at all to be able to speak with any kind of authority.
No idea.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, like, the companies that Alex is talking about have been, by this point, sold by Google.
Sure.
And it was clearly not an attempt to create robot armies.
Yes. No. Not yet.
Right.
Not yet. There's still time.
Mm-hmm. So in 2020, as we sit, we are in the midst of the coronavirus, the COVID-19 situation, which Alex is, believes is a bioweapon that the globalists have released in order to precipitate martial law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what's interesting. Alex was talking about, like, bioweapon stuff back in 2013.
Yeah.
Although the timeline and the order of events is a little bit different.
And listen, you could grow up and be an adult and get ready for what's happening, but you won't do it. You stay in a childlike, arrested development, 3-year-old level, I'm talking to new listeners, saying this isn't happening. Oh, it's happening. While you're busy watching the NFL, while you're busy into your favorite music star, while you're busy watching your favorite sitcom, we're under total siege because the globalists are taking the planet over towards their goal to then bring in planetary rule to then drop the hammer. They can't do it till planetary rule's in because a nuclear war might happen if they release these bioweapons. They've done the war games. They know it's going to result in a nuclear war, and they don't probably want that.
Probably.
So they've got to get the police state in place first and a global standardization before they do this. And the minute they get a real-world government in, they're going to up the taxes, bankrupt everybody, 10 times worse, and then they're going to drop the hammer.
So you can see here in 2013, Alex's conception is they need to get the martial law in place first. Then they use the bioweapons to like remove a bunch of people. Now it's completely flipped. The bioweapon is released in order to get the martial law in place.
Right.
Although in 2013, he was saying they wouldn't release the bioweapon first because they've don't, I mean, he usually would say actuaries, but this time he said war games.
Sure.
And they figured out that that would cause a nuclear war.
Right.
Everything's changed.
Like, so
it's the same like pieces, but they're organized very differently. Yeah.
Here's my prediction now. All right. I don't think anything Alex says in any era is meant with any kind of actual predictive ability.
Uh-huh.
However, I have now decided that we are comparing 2020 Alex's predictions to 2013 Alex's predictions, and both of them or either of them will always be correct. When they are in disagreement, 2013 will happen.
To him, here's what I think is interesting. I don't know if I agree with what you're saying at all. But he,
I doubt it,
in 2020 thinks he's been completely consistent the whole time.
Of course he has.
Because he said the word bioweapon back then.
That's true.
And so therefore, everything is the same.
Right.
But technically, the things that he's saying don't match up.
No.
The predictions are different.
Now, the globalist plans are always 10 years behind.
That is true.
So there's the possibility that they themselves did a new study, new war game, and they were like, well, this isn't going to start a nuclear war. Not releasing it is going to start a nuclear war. So we got to release it now in order to take over to save us from a nuclear war.
I don't know anymore,
man. I'm following perfectly. This makes sense.
Okay. So I know that I've been accused of being a witch in the past.
You have.
By you.
Witch.
Because of the way that times that I go back into the past, there are things that are shockingly relevant to the present.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say that this is one of them. And keep in mind that in all the episodes that I've heard of Alex's show in 2020, I've not heard him bring up the name Breonna Taylor once.
Every day I see where police go to the wrong house and shoot someone. And don't even get in trouble. I've got two reports today in the stack of that. And Anthony Gucciardi last night woke up to tanks, armored vehicles, you name it, at the wrong house. And big, giant, fat goblin commander cop with the SWAT team literally dragging some woman out who was innocent. It was the wrong house. In a fake drug war where they ship all the drugs in to begin with.
Alex is quite anti-cop in 2013.
Wow.
He has a pretty... I mean, I guess probably not against like the individuals necessary.
Sure.
You wouldn't say that he's ACAB.
No. I very much doubt that.
But he's the cops are going into the wrong houses and shooting people. Like you'd think that would be right in his wheelhouse then to talk about this woman who was shot in a no-knock warrant.
Also, it seems like that one is a very easy one to be consistent on.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to have a fungible moral position on it. Going into the wrong house, murdering somebody, and then facing no consequences for it seems like it's outside of time itself.
Right. Even
in our time capsule episode, she's not going to be listening to this in the future and be like, oh, no. We totally think that's fine now.
Well, hopefully not.
Never mind.
Yeah. Things are weird in 2020. We have no predictability.
We got nothing.
At all.
It could be anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess the only thing you could really squabble over is like demanding more information.
Sure.
Reserving judgment about individual cases until you know more about them is really the only place I can see any kind of argument here.
Yeah.
It seems very simple, but I mean, it's the same thing with Alex and his love of you know, carrying weapons legally, and then, yeah. you know, Philando Castillo gets killed carrying a gun legally. And
well, Gucciardi doesn't sound like a traditionally non-white name. So.
Anthony Gucciardi is this guy who ran like an alternative health blog, mm-hmm. and he got brought in to InfoWars around the same time that Alex was like pushing his supplement line.
Sure.
And he's no longer there. Mm-hmm. I think he hates Alex now.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure because that falls under the heading of like, I've seen some videos of people talking shit about Alex, mm-hmm. and I think Anthony Gucciardi is one of them,
mm-hmm.
but that's stuff that just doesn't stick with me, because it's like, this feels like gossip.
Yeah, okay.
And so, but if I understand correctly, I think he hates Alex now, and he hasn't been seen in quite a while on InfoWars, but he was a pretty big mainstay around this time in terms of, like, being another Health Ranger kind of guy.
Okay,
like, he was a mini Mike Adams.
Right.
Sort of.
He's proto Mike Adams.
No, because Mike was around then, too.
Oh, okay.
Mike is definitely in play.
Okay.
And so is Natural News. Alex brings up Dr. Group a couple times, so he's definitely in the sphere.
He's collecting weirdo doctor fakes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But, it's interesting to me that Alex, you see that. You see that this principle that, like, I can't disagree with that. Cops shouldn't be going in people's houses and shooting them.
Shouldn't be going into people's houses and murdering them.
I salute you, Alex.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Very simple.
And it's just weird that in the present day, you just don't see that in a very... And you know what? It seems like it would be something that he could very, like, opportunistically support.
Totally.
It seems like something that he could get points for being on the right side of. And still, I don't see that happening.
It would get him a shit ton of attention just to say that he doesn't want cops to murder people.
It would be nice.
Like, yeah.
So, here we go.
Another, sure.
This is a nice, I don't know, maybe a little sprig of parsley.
Mm-hmm.
This is 2013. Alex liked to sing.
Living on the road, my friend. Gonna keep you free and clean.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. And now you wear your skin like iron, and your breath is hard as kerosene. You weren't your mama's only boy, but her favorite
one.
It's
gotta be one of my favorite Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard duets.
She began to cry when you said goodbye.
Sank into your dreams.
Sank into your dreams.
All right, folks, we are back live on this Tuesday edition.
Alex loves Poncho and Lefty.
Ugh.
You know what's really interesting to me? I think he only knows like 3 Willie Nelson songs.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think he knows like some Highwaymen, Poncho and Lefty, and then that Grave Digger.
Yeah.
When you dig my grave.
I don't see him being a big like variety of music guy. Like, I see him as having a couple of songs that he listens to all the time, or he does not listen to music.
He has some weird deep cuts though that come out every now and again. But with Willie Nelson, it seems like he has maybe 6.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 or 6 songs. It's weird.
He likes every to sing along.
Maybe it's the only things that are covered by whatever his lease agreement is.
Could
for
be.
Music.
Could be. Yeah.
He's only got like these ones he could play. He'd love to play some of the Shotgun Willie or whatever.
Well, he's got Now That's What I Call Music 22.
Now That's What I Call Willie.
They had a bunch of Willie Nelson songs on, I imagine.
Maybe Willie threatened him. He was like, you play these songs and none other.
You don't touch any other music.
Willie's high as hell.
Blazing.
Let me tell you how it goes, Alex.
Hey, all right, Alex.
So this was not what I expected to hear, this next clip. This was where I was like, this episode isn't going to be about much.
And coming up in the next segment, I am going to detail all of the facts here on Earth and here on this planet dealing with our soils.
I was like, hold on now. Hold on.
All of the facts on Earth dealing with soils.
I was like, what have we gotten ourselves
all
into?
All right, okay.
We are now going to sit here and learn everything
God
there is to know on this planet about soil.
The past used to be quaint, but like 80 years in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now 2013 is like, oh, look at you guys. You guys are so cute in the past.
Alex.
You guys are having a great time.
I don't want to learn about soil. I don't want you to teach me about soil.
I would greatly prefer this. Look, We've got a man singing and talking about soils. That's just a regular show. That's just a regular show.
I was very confused when he said that. And he doesn't really follow through with that, but soil is a topic of conversation than normal. Alex gets into talking about scurvy in this next clip.
Okay.
Talking about the FDA.
If you go on and do research, you learn that the FDA has continued to lower the minimum daily allowance of what they say you need of vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K. I'm going to get Dr. Mercola on about this.
Don't do that.
This week, if you can get him on.
Get him on. Going to need him.
Or Dr. Blaylock, all these medical doctors.
Got to get Dr. Blaylock.
I get nutritionists on all day long. They have lowered the level of vitamin C down to near scurvy-inducing levels where you just start having rot holes in your skin and your skin basically falls apart and you prematurely age. How many people do you see who you talk to? A 50-year-old woman looks like they're 100. You go, let me guess, do you ever eat fruits and vegetables? No, I don't. I eat at McDonald's. Ugh. I mean, that's why they literally all have rot holes in their arms. They have scurvy. I've talked to the nutritionist. They get on vitamin C in a month. It's the holes in their arms are all healed.
So, firstly, I don't think that this hypothetical person that Alex is impersonating who only eats McDonald's would have their behavior affected too greatly by an altered FDA recommendation. I'm pretty sure that no one would say, I only eat McDonald's because the FDA said that was a good idea. I follow their advice.
I used to eat all the fruits and vegetables, but then they lowered the vitamin C limit. So I'm like, I'll just eat at McDonald's forever now.
Obviously, if your diet doesn't include anything that has vitamin C in it, you could end up in bad health. But for most people, you get what you need without supplementation. An article in the Journal of the College of Family Physicians of Canada explored a slight reemergence of scurvy cases in 2008. From the article, quote, in a retrospective chart review conducted at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, New York, in Scottsdale, Arizona, from 1976 to 2002, 10 of 12 scurvy cases were related to alcohol abuse, illicit drug use, and psychiatric disorders. There are a ton of foods that people eat regularly, even things you can buy at McDonald's that have vitamin C in them. If you're having a specific problem that might be caused by a vitamin deficiency, it might be a good idea to speak to a dietitian and see if there's something you're missing. What is not a great angle is to imagine that you have a problem, and the reason must be that you're not taking enough of something, so you need supplements.
Yeah.
That's the fear that Alex is exploiting here in order to try and create feelings of deficiency in his audience's mind that he can then come in and solve, when for most people, there's no deficiency to begin with.
No. I mean, if you are a 17th century privateer, then yes, I agree.
Sure.
Do not eat at McDonald's all the time. That's a terrible idea.
And suck on that lime.
Yeah, get some limes going. Yes. That's the plan.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, yes. There are dietary deficiencies are, you know, not as rampant as Alex wants people to think, but some people do have nutritional deficits. And to the extent that that is real for some people, sometimes supplementation can help. Sometimes dietary changes can be enough to get you into a better health. But like what he's doing here is exploitative and predatory.
And not least of which is, once again, putting the blame upon a depressed economic sector as being like, well, why don't you guys eat all your fruits and vegetables? You guys are just eating at McDonald's all the time, discounting the fact that so many places are fucking calorie poor that there's really not much option to... We can't all go to fucking Whole Foods.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Although I don't think it's fair for you to say that. It seems like that's what Alex is saying, but that's not entirely what he's saying.
No,
he's
it's not entirely.
He's also saying that the globalists are ruining the soil, which is why he wants to do this long lecture.
That's fair.
On everything there is to know about soil.
There is that. I will give him multi-dimensions.
It's
here,
not
yes.
just blaming people who can't afford maybe more expensive food.
Sure.
And, you know, live in a food desert or something like that. He doesn't even unpack that necessarily. That's kind of unexamined territory.
Sure.
This is more about the fact that just nutrients are gone from food.
They're taking it away from food.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Alex gets into this is all because of an article that he read about. They did some studies and they found that basically most people don't need supplements. You don't really need
most
people.
Yeah.
There are some people who it could be helpful to, but largely speaking, there are some supplements that have things that if you take too much of them, it can hurt you.
Totally.
And most people, through a proper diet, don't need them.
And upon publishing that research, the billion-dollar industry of supplements went, oh no, we're useless. I guess we'll just stop.
Nope. They decided to misrepresent things.
And oh, that's so smart.
The way Alex is selling this, and he has a really tough time even committing to this angle because it's such bullshit. He's just saying that, like, oh, the FDA has come out and said you don't need vitamins. All right,
dude. That's fair.
Too big a swing.
Yesterday, they roll out with a huge PR blitz that vitamins and minerals do nothing, and basically the case is closed. And on CNN, CBS, ABC, Fox, MSNBC, everything. My local paper has it in there. National papers, just everywhere. Case closed. You don't need any vitamins, any minerals, any supplements.
So he's presenting this as like the FDA has come out and say, fuck vitamins, fuck minerals. When in reality, it's...
You only need to eat rocks like a bird. You put them in your gullet. It helps digest the nothing.
We'll be damned. We had no idea, but we looked into it, and you should eat paper and only paper.
Listen, turns out air.
Yeah.
Air. That's all you need.
Airitarians.
Do you know what the problem is? You're not chewing when you breathe. That's why you don't get the vitamins in the air. Everybody just needs to chew.
Yep, that is an innovation of 2013.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what he's misrepresenting. And it's so transparent that as he goes through the episode, he has to cop to the fact that what they're saying is if you have a proper diet, you don't need supplements.
Right, but what they mean is that vitamins are nothing.
So then he has to extend it to like, oh, yes, but it's impossible to have a diet that gets you all the supplements or the nutrients that you need. And it's just like, okay, this is falling apart as you talk more. But it's clear. It's a transparently clear thing. It's like, all right, you run a supplement business.
Right.
This is why you're doing this.
Very it's just obviously. Like,
all right.
Did you know that until they created vitamin supplements, all humans died?
It's true.
It's just true.
Unfortunately, after all humans.
Okay. Still well, there's that. Okay, you're right. But the FDA caused those deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently, I don't know how true this is. I didn't look into this because I just decided to accept it as possibly true and move along. The idea that the FDA has lowered the allowance or the amount you should get of certain things,
sure,
I believe that's possible. I would say it's entirely possible that further research has shown like you don't need this amount, but you should have about this amount.
Yeah,
I think that's possible.
People revised the food pyramid. We grow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. More access to more information means better advice.
Huh.
Now, the reason that I kept this clip in is because Alex is trying to come up with examples of things they've lowered the recommended amount of.
All right.
He fucking trips over his own feet.
Okay.
They've lowered the daily allowance of what you need, the government says, of things like vitamin C and things like oil of oregano down to a level that literally
regular
is starvation, according to the medical doctors we've interviewed here.
So you got two examples. One of them is vitamin C.
The other is
oil of oregano.
Did you know I used to take so much oil of oregano? I used to.
I can't tell if you're joking. Because you had a weird period in your life. You could have actually been
an
essential oils guy.
I don't remember 3 years. Those three might be those.
Those were my oil of oregano years.
Until the FDA lowered the limit, I was blind out of my mind.
I will say, I don't know if oil of oregano is something that everyone needs in their daily routine.
Is it, I think?
In the same way that vitamin C is, definitely. Yeah, oil of oregano is a real thing.
Is it? He might have made that up.
No, it's one of these essential oils. It's in the category with the FDA of things that are like, generally, it doesn't hurt you.
Sure.
So I don't think it's controlled by the FDA because it's just sort of like, it's fine.
Because the supplement industry is like, we're going to give you $1 million. Leave us alone.
It's a tell.
Yeah.
That's on Alex's list.
Yeah.
Vitamin C and oil of oregano.
Yeah.
You couldn't just come up with another vitamin?
B11. Say B11. No one's going to follow up.
Iron.
Nobody even knows if B11 is a thing.
So Alex gets to talking about salt. Hey, he's so stupid.
And if you're watching on TV, you can look at this or just go to the local supermarket and go look at any major salt that isn't naturally occurring. The natural ones have good iodine and other trace minerals and elements in them.
Come on now.
It says this salt does not supply iodine a necessary nutrient. Says it right. And why is that? Because the feds pressured him in the 20s iodine in the salt because of literally millions of people being born mentally retarded from not having iodine in the womb, which is on record will cause all sorts of problems and lower IQs after birth and sure. goiter. That's people that look like their Jabba the Hutt with just huge things uh-huh. hanging under their uh-huh. necks. Where you look like a human worm. Africa's devastated by this. China's totally. Devastated by it. China, in many areas, puts iodine in the water so this doesn't happen because it's just a plague of diseases and degenerative problems. Now, that's a fact. The feds by the 70s basically said, remove it or we'll come after you. Remove iodine out of the salt. Isn't that loving of them?
So the feds in the 70s were like, get that iodine out of the salt.
Hey. We've been fighting you since the 20s. We got the Untouchables over here who had to switch things up. Now, ridiculous. Finally, in the 70s, under the Carter administration, yes. which Alex hates desperately.
True.
But also, the Chinese are putting iodine in their water to uh-huh. keep this from happening,
yeah.
which is good, but they put fluoride in their water, which is bad. So you never know.
I mean, look, iodine deficiency is like a real problem.
Yeah, we've discussed this.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Uh-huh. But here's the thing. The reason that salt that Alex has from McCormick's, you know, he's rambling about this. The reason sure. it doesn't have iodine in it is because it's sea salt. You'll find the same warnings on containers of Morton sea salts, as well as just about any sea salt that you're going to find on the market.
Sure.
The reason for this is that sea salt and table salt are produced differently. And because of how the sea salt market operates, it's a product that generally is subject to as little processing as possible. The salt comes from evaporating water, which leaves flakes of salt, which retain some of the minerals and characteristics of the source that they come from. Table salt, conversely, is generally the product of mining salt deposits, and it's a much less niche product, so it can have iodine added easily in the processing stages,
sure,
and
sure,
it
sure.
generally still does. If you go buy any table right. salt, it'll almost always right. be iodized salt, but sea salt generally isn't. I agree with Alex in as much as maybe there should be better messaging to the world that sea salt doesn't contain iodine. But I'm not sure I can go along with his imagining that this confusion is leading to any kind of large-scale iodine deficiency in the United States, because it's just not.
Every day I'm walking around in all these hipster neighborhoods, even in Wrigleyville, you walk around, you have all these people wondering why they've got iodine deficiencies. You can't go to a bar and get iodized salt, Dan. All bars, sea salt covered.
Mm-hmm.
Sea salt covered. You have a margarita? Sea salt.
Well, I mean, to an extent, there is a reality that sea salt became a bit of a craze.
Sure,
and
sure, sure.
It probably did have at least some effect on iodine levels.
Maybe.
Now, I'm not positive if it reached any kind of crisis point, but it is a factor, and if people aren't careful and only eat sure. sea salt...
Right, right. You get a tulip problem. You're in Denmark all over again.
The reality is also salt, that's not the only thing that provides iodine. You can eat seafood, milk, yogurt, eggs, even some breads, and get all the iodine that you need to maintain proper health. There are definitely serious problems that can occur from iodine deficiency, and it's a problem that's important in the developing world particularly. But this is not an issue the way Alex makes it out to be, particularly not for his audience. Again, this is an example of Alex working to try and convince his audience that there's something wrong with them that they didn't even realize, which he can provide the solution to. Because I know that his business model relies heavily on selling iodine supplements, it's hard not to see this as an intentionally predatory act.
Yeah.
Like, he's going through all this stuff about health things and... So much of it is just convincing his audience that there's an underlying problem they didn't know they had
right.
that he can provide a placebo solution for. And it's pretty shitty.
Yeah, taking advantage. Everybody feels bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. Taking advantage of that and just giving them this like, no. What it really is your iodine deficiency.
You just
need to eat all this salt.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Put this supplement up down your gullet and you won't feel depressed.
Yeah. So Alex claimed, you know, he said that he's going to tell us everything in the world there is to know about soil.
Yes.
And he doesn't really, but he does mention an article. So.
Oh, that's close.
So let me show you some of the articles. Let me show you the facts. Number one, dirt poor. This is the Scientific American, because you get some good studies out there. Dirt poor. Have fruits and vegetables become less nutritious? And they go on to break down major studies going back in the last 100 years. From the University of Texas at Austin Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition. and agriculture nutritional data from 1950 to 1999 with 43 different fruits and vegetables, and then looking at studies before that and what is in them metrically by numbers, real studies, they are debilitated in some cases by 98% vitamins, minerals.
I have no idea where Alex is getting those numbers from because they aren't in that Scientific American article. Yeah. This is an article that's part of their column Earth Talk, where readers can send in questions, which their writers will then answer. This question had to do with whether or not fruits and vegetables were more nutritious 50 years ago, and as it turns out, the answer is yes, but probably not to the extent Alex is reporting. The article cites an analysis by the Cushy Institute, which found out found that there was a 27% drop in calcium levels in 12 fresh vegetables they studied, as well as a 37% drop in iron, 21% drop in vitamin A, and 30% drop in vitamin C.
Oh, did they finally get off their ass and do a study?
Well, experts believed that this was a result of focusing on agricultural practices that are meant to expand yield and crop size while ignoring processes that could be done that would enrich soils. The article discusses ways to push back against this, like alternating fields between growing seasons and embracing organic growing methods in order to rehabilitate soils. Scientific American actually revisited this topic in 2018 to discuss new findings in the research. As it turns out, a new paper had been published in the journal Scientific Advances, which found that, quote, concentrations of essential nutrients decreased in 18 strains of rice after being exposed to increased carbon dioxide levels in the experiment.
Okay, so climate change.
From the Scientific American article, quote, agricultural scientists have known for some time that our food has been getting less nutritious, but they thought it was only due to a byproduct of modern farming methods, soil overuse, which leads to mineral depletion, or breeders favoring high-yield varieties, which sacrifices nutrition for size. Meanwhile, plant researchers working over the last couple of decades were finding something surprising, that elevated carbon dioxide also contributes to lowering mineral content in plants. The plant and agricultural scientists each had pieces of the puzzle, but no one put two and two together to fully explain the nutrient depletion phenomenon until recently. There's some evidence emerging that a large factor in nutrient decline in soils and plants has to do with excess CO2. The plants need CO2 to grow, in the same way we need calories, but if we have too many calories, we become less healthy. There are some who are suggesting that the same is true for plants and CO2. There are real issues here, and there are issues that are particularly important, again, for people in the developing world. But Alex doesn't care about any of the real-world aspects of this.
Oh, no.
He's using this as a prop to sell his supplements. And it becomes really clear because Anthony Gucciardi comes in, and it's all just a fucking infomercial.
Okay, so I've gone over some of that for you. Anthony Gucciardi is coming in now just to cover a few of the angles. And obviously, I promote and sell vitamins and minerals that I've used, that I believe in, that have done wonders in my life. And everybody that's used them, you've heard the calls, not one negative call on our proprietary Nation Iodine. It's blowing people away. Of course it is.
This is insane, man. This is like an hour of his show is spent with this weird, like, I'm going to tell you all about the soil, which is all a prelude to getting into talking with Anthony Gucciardi, which is all just an infomercial for his supplement line.
Man.
I was shocked.
That's synergy. That's really naked capitalism, you know?
I was shocked by it because it's like a lot of this show. It's a lot. I was shocked because it's simultaneously more appropriate and crasser.
Yes. You know,
it's both.
Yeah.
Compared to how Alex markets things today.
Yeah.
It's so, it's very, very pretending to not be an ad while it's an ad.
Yeah.
But there's less like desperation to it. That's the weird balance, the similarity and the difference.
It is almost more like skating by back then than it is now, just absolute like, I need money. And back here, they're kind of like almost giving you a little wink like, hey, listen, if you don't want to take your vitamins, that's fine. You're going to die all the time if you listen to what the FDA says. And I'm going to talk about that for the next hour.
I think you can also see.
Also, you're going to need to buy these vitamins from somewhere. So I'm going to talk about where you can buy them from for the next hour.
I think you can also see how like it would probably be more profitable too. Like I have to imagine he's making more money on this method.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, like I said, this is all just an infomercial.
You know, there's one reason I tend to get madder and madder as a 3-hour show goes on each day.
I don't like to work.
And that's because I'm looking at the federal, state, and university studies on the soils being 99% debilitated. I'm looking at the brain damage numbers in utero of the humans developing and then after. I'm waiting in the documentation. They're taking the good stuff out of the food and putting the bad stuff in it.
This is just all like narratives and little darts he's throwing in order to lead people down the path to his supplements. And it's just disgraceful.
Yeah.
So I'm not even going to play any clips of Gucciardi in there because it's basically what you'd expect. It's just, like when we went back to 2015, we were looking at it. And Dr. Group would come in for like an hour and they'd talk about it's the same thing.
It's
Gucciardi leaves and Alex starts rambling and he's talking about how everyone's stupid.
Sure.
And man, like this just felt unnecessarily cruel.
Our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries. So we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
And listen, I'm going to tell you the deal. She's a very beautiful young lady. I don't find her attractive. A beautiful woman that is smart, very attractive. That woman is so ugly. I mean, and you know she'll end up being a trophy wife for some globalist executive who stole all their money. That's what he wants, a wife that is literally nothing but a biological android sex bot who can't tie her shoelaces.
Alex is complaining about people being dumb, so he plays that clip of the contestant from the Miss Teen USA pageant who gave that unfortunately incoherent answer to a question she was posed on stage. I have a number of problems with this. The first is that this woman was 18 years old and on a huge stage being asked a question that she clearly didn't understand and she had to respond to quick. Sure, it was a bad meandering answer, but it's really cruel to judge someone so harshly for it considering all the variables. Any of us on a bad day under a certain amount of stress could end up finding ourselves saying something equally embarrassing. It's kind of mean to define someone by that embarrassing moment, particularly when it's a person that's so young. The mockery and shaming about this moment was really severe for this woman. She said, quote, "I definitely went through a period where I was very, very depressed, but I never let anybody see that stuff, except people I could trust. I had some very dark moments where I thought about committing suicide." Second, this was from the 2007 Miss Teen USA pageant, and this episode of Alex's show is from 2013. It seems like he's digging pretty far back just to take an unnecessary swing at this woman. Also, just because it's fun, after this contestant, who was South Carolina's Caitlin Upton, went viral with this unfortunate answer, and the video of her at the pageant got 15 million views on YouTube, she was signed to a contract with a modeling agency worth up to $30,000 a day. That modeling agency was owned by Donald Trump, who also owned the pageant at that time.
We're doing great.
Also, another one of Alex's current heroes, Tucker Carlson, had some particularly unsavory things to say about Miss Upton as well. Appearing on an episode of Bubba the Love Sponge's radio show, Tucker said, quote, "She'd probably be a pretty good wife. If you had a wife that dumb, would it be a good or bad thing?" Tucker was 38 at the time.
I don't understand how many 40-year-old white dudes with a giant platform that they can talk to millions of people want to shit on an 18-year-old girl at a teen pageant.
Well, I mean,
what are you expecting? She's at a fucking pageant.
What I think is really interesting is Alex at the end there is like, she's going to end up a trophy wife for some globalist. And, you know, Tucker Carlson. And now Alex loves Tucker Carlson.
Of course.
And loves Donald Trump, who signed her to a contract immediately. Yeah,
the world is...
How weird.
It's a marae of old white men shitting all over women. That's kind of a...
But how weird is that, like, direct line? Mm-hmm. Very strange. I swear I'm not a witch.
What's the point?
So, Alex has another guest.
Sure.
He had Gucciardi.
He had the Gooch.
Uh-huh. To talk of just selling shit.
Yeah.
And now he has another guest, which is also just another person that Alex makes money off of.
Ted Anderson with a mustache?
No.
All right. We're joined for the balance of the hour by Matt Dubiel, a guy I've had a chance to meet a couple times in Austin. And he's had us on for a couple years now on his fine station he manages, WCKG in Chicago, 1530, WCKG.com. They got a power-packed lineup there.
Alex has his Chicago affiliate guy, the guy who owns the radio station on.
Yeah, this is, Dubious Dubiel.
What is this show?
Come on. Hey. It's always nice to hear WCKG. Because then I think a Serengeti song, favorite actor Dennehy. Come on.
Sure. Matt Dubiel is someone who has shown up over years on Alex's show. Yeah. He's somebody who like just periodically will pop in.
Yeah, we've talked about him in the past. Whew,
I think his station is actually one of the, it might be literally the only station I could find in the country that plays Owen Schroyer and David Knight's shows.
Really?
I think it might be the only affiliate
now.
For those. I don't know if now, but the last time I looked into it, wow. Like 6 months ago or so.
Wow.
So
thanks, Dubell.
Yeah, this guy sucks. I guess the premise is that he's supposed to be on to talk about what life is like under Rahm Emanuel.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah. Bad. I don't know.
He lives in the burbs.
Yeah.
So I don't care about his perspective on local politics, but he does say a couple interesting things.
Okay.
You know, it's like you said, there's a lot of good things about Chicago. I went to the Bears game the other night, Monday Night Football, and Ditka's number was retired, and it was a big deal, and I had free tickets, so we went. There was nobody there. No one. Now, it was cold. It gets cold here in Chicago.
But does it? That
doesn't typically stop Chicago Bear fans from going to Chicago games. I saw the same thing happen at the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game the other day, where the Pittsburgh stadium was darn near empty. Well, why is that? Why is it that all of the storefronts that are for lease, the retail spaces are empty? Something is going on, and it's not by accident, I don't think. Chicago's starting to feel a lot like Detroit these days.
So this is a Monday night game on December 9th, 2013. Mm-hmm. The attendance at that game, no one was there, according to Matt Dubiel. The attendance was 62,209.
Yeah, but hey, 229. Look, Soldier Field fits 80,000, I believe.
Give or take, yeah.
So that's practically
but
nobody.
That wasn't the highest attendance for the season, but it's higher than the first three games of the season, the first two of which were home games in Chicago. This number of attendance is right about average for the past 12 years, at least.
That sounds about right.
There's nothing discernible that's out of the ordinary about the turnout for that football game. I kind of think maybe like one of Matt's friends just didn't want to go with him, and this is how he's processing it.
Could be.
According to the Chicago Tribune, it was 8 degrees that night with a start time of 7:40.
Balmy 8 degrees, though.
That factor alone could explain like the 1,000, 2,000 less people showing up.
It was a humid 8 degrees, Danny.
Also, the average attendance at Detroit Lions games is actually higher than Bears games.
Yeah,
so I don't know what he's saying about Detroit. Anyway,
I'm such a huge fan of how uncurious these people are. You know, like, why does it feel like, why are you asking so many eminently answerable questions only to imply something instead of actually looking for an answer?
Well, you see,
that was a question that was an implication that I already know the answer to.
You see the empty seats, and you're like, there's no one here.
There's nobody
instead
here.
Of thinking, like, maybe it's really hard to sell out.
Yeah. 80,000 is a lot of people to get in any one place.
When it's 8 degrees out.
When it's 8 degrees out.
Yeah.
That was almost even like him calling out Chicago's identity is like, Bears fans aren't even real Bears fans anymore. Wow. Like, screw you.
Yeah.
I don't care.
He's from the burbs.
Also, you shouldn't be a Bears fan anymore, and NFL is evil.
Fair enough.
Etc.
So Matt takes his kids on road trips. They go drive across the country.
Sure.
Which I can relate to. I've gone across the country a number of times.
It. Yeah, it's fun.
He complains about some stuff here.
Sure.
I've got kids ranging from 11. My youngest is going to be 2 in February. Every year we take a summer road trip. We drive around the country, the great United States of America. And the last 2 years, we did a loop to loop. We went through Ohio and we went down to Nashville. And, this last summer,
we went
to New Jersey and back. And as we drove through, I saw firsthand the America that most of us don't see. Most of the people in Austin don't see it. We live in very privileged areas. The rest of the country looks like a bomb fell on it. The rest of the country looks like it's third world. The rest of the country is completely destroyed.
Wow.
You got billboards where, you know, companies just stopped advertising on them because nobody's driving down that highway. The paper's blowing in the wind, and I'm driving through there and I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, boy, when my grandparents took my father and his brothers and sisters around the country to the Grand Canyon and stuff, there was the majesty and the wonderment of traveling down Route 66 and seeing these great little shops and these great little restaurants and these great diners. Where is it? I don't know where it is.
I got a couple things to say about this.
Yeah.
these are the guys who are supposed to be like LA and New York elites think everything is flyover country. And
yes.
You're like, everywhere in America looks like there was a bomb went off. Destroyed.
It's a nightmare. Everywhere but the flyover states are disgusting.
Strange. Super
Come
weird.
On down to Chicago.
Super
Love
weird.
Chicago.
Burbs. Super weird for this guy to have that approach. And Alex be like, yeah, totally.
Oh,
so
boy.
My first point that I want to make is that this dude's purely talking about the aesthetic view that he's captured from driving along interstate highways.
Yes.
Sure, things look pretty bleak if all you're seeing are old billboards and like out-of-date gas stations, but that isn't the full picture of the other America. There's a whole lot that's just a little ways off those highways that's vibrant, which you'd totally miss if you're only seeing what's right next to the road. Maybe the fact that those billboards are empty, maybe that's not a sign that no one uses those roads anymore. Maybe it's a sign that they never should have been built in the first place. Maybe it's just like, hey, fuck those billboards. Let's take them down.
You know, the Chicago School of Economics is insane, but they did use the how many billboards are filled metric of how the United States was doing.
Yeah.
GDP dropped way down.
Oh, no.
It's real bad.
Maybe the fact that there are all these rundown gas stations around is a reflection of how much better our cars are than when those highways were first built. Maybe. Maybe you don't need those. Maybe no one stops at them because we get much better gas mileage.
Well, you know, stopping every 10 to 12 miles was really good for the local economies.
It was.
Every 10 to 12 miles.
It was.
Yeah.
And that's what Route 66 was.
Yeah, that's basically the idea.
It was a huge deal in the early 1900s because it was a road that connected Chicago and California. But it stopped being nearly as important once other roads began being built and our highway system came into place. Early on, its dominance as a cross-country road allowed businesses to prosper along it because people had to use it to make that kind of trip. Ever since the passage of the Interstate Highway Act of 1956, Route 66 has gradually become less important. And now it's really, you know, it's just a thing. You know,
that's
there's
nice.
Some stretches
sometimes
that
sometimes you go on
historic
Route 66.
Right.
Everybody sees it.
It's been like readjusted over and over again.
Yeah,
it's not even the same thing it was. Yes, I just tire of all of these people's hearkening back to a past.
Oh,
day. They idealize.
When it used to be
right.
It used to be great, Dan.
It's not a system that would really have any function nowadays.
Yeah.
The idea of like prosperous businesses everywhere along a highway is not something that really would exist in the modern world.
No, it's silly.
It's something that existed because of necessity,
right?
And opportunity at a time when. Cars
sure.
were much less sophisticated,
yeah.
And there were less roads.
And no small amount of resistance to the idea of building railways,
yep.
cheap, renewable energy railways.
There's 100 factors to it,
yeah.
And I don't care about taking seriously the opinion of somebody who is only on this show because he does. he allows Alex to syndicate on his station and makes Alex a bunch of money.
If you are a right-wing reactionary, Dan, there's one thing that unites all of them. They hate roads.
Yep.
Or the roads are the...
They like the roads of the past.
Well, yes.
They hate
yes,
the roads
course.
Of the future.
The roads of the future are terrifying.
Yes. So Matt Dubiel comes and goes.
Mm.
Now we get another guest. And this guy sucks. He's just on to talk about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific
sure,
Partnership.
Sure, sure.
And it's actually kind of an illuminating interview, but not because of the interview, but because it happens.
Now, let me tell you who William F. Jasper is as he joins us. He's a graduate of the University of Idaho and joined the staff of the John Birch Society in 1976 as a researcher and current senior editor of The New American.
So The New American is the publication that The American Opinion, which is the original John Birch Society publication, became.
Right, right, right.
And so this dude is just a big old bircher from way back.
Right, right, right.
Like high-end bircher. And when Alex, like, he likes to pretend that he's not just a John Birch Society guy, but he is.
Yeah.
He is 100%. And whenever Alex interacts with a JBS guy, that comes out like this.
And he joins us to break down the de facto world corporate government. First time I learned about Agenda 21 in 1992 from William F. Jasper. First time I learned about the UN and these biospheres, William F. Jasper. And so he joins us now.
So much of Alex's intellectual lineage very clearly comes from propaganda that was put out by the John Birch Society. Yeah. So, I mean, like, when it's almost comical to me. Like, the idea that he knows well enough to pretend most of the time to not really be associated with the John Birchers, but he is. He is absolutely.
First time I heard about William F. Jasper is when my dad was abusing me with his book, and I decided to start reading it immediately following that.
Literary child abuse.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex just makes clear that his lineage traces back directly to the Birch.
They're authoritarian dirtbags, and the Republican leadership is bought off by them. That's why we got George P. Bush saying he's a Tea Partier now. They want to absorb the Tea Party that comes out of the JBS and the New American and Ron Paul and then Alex Jones and everybody else after that. We're not radicals. They say we're radicals all day. They're the radicals usurping our republic. We sound crazy because we're covering their crazy authoritarian agenda.
Or
there's another possibility.
There's one more.
What got?
They're fucking crazy.
Yeah, there might be wild out there.
Yeah.
Anti-communist.
They call us radicals, and just because we believe in all the nonsense John Bircher stuff, that's like, what are you talking about? John Birch Society makes sense.
Sure. So, you know, he's like, they think that, you know, we sound crazy because we're talking about their crazy.
Yeah.
And Alex uses a shitty example.
If I told you all the crazy stuff about Nero, I'd sound crazy, but I'm not Nero. I'm telling you what Nero did. Marrying his horse, everything else. These power mad nuts must be stopped. Now, if you order by the 19th, we can guarantee whether it's
high
quality products at InfoWarsLife.com, the Chiapas high quality coffee, totally organic, my favorite blend, now brought to you, and the old free market way to fund our operation, the InfoWars high def dash cams, the lowest price you'll find anywhere on the same
dash cam.
We bought them in bulk and offer it at the lowest listed retail price anywhere. To document what's happening with the police, bureaucrats, wildlife, you name it. That's an InfoWarsStore.com.
So Alex is selling dash cams.
Getting in on the dash cam game.
In order to keep wild police at bay.
Got to stop them.
Which is interesting because that's not certainly a concern that he has in the present day, trying to get his audience to wear dash cams in order to protect themselves from police. Also, I love the idea that it's like, you know, we got to keep up on wildlife. Get those dash cams to keep up with wildlife.
Of course. You want to see some deer. See how they're doing.
So also, I should tell you that Nero didn't marry his horse.
No, that wasn't him.
That's the incorrect legend about Nero is that he married his mother. It was Caligula who was said to have made his horse his consort and also tried to make his horse a senator.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is probably not really historically accurate.
No.
Alex can't even keep his ahistorical gossip straight.
Yeah. Furthermore, specifically, am I completely wrong in thinking that Nero was who the Book of Revelations was written
about? People believe that.
That's about, I could be completely wrong, but I think it's an interpretation.
Yeah.
I think it's just interesting that he would specifically bring up talking about how evil and insane Nero was being crazy when his favorite book is talking about how evil and insane Nero.
One of the things that's also interesting to note is the absence of explicit religious evangelism.
That. Yeah, there's that.
I mean, it's gone without notice in our conversation so far, but like there is no begging people to accept Jesus on this episode.
All right, here's what we're going to do. I am going to tell you all of the facts about soil, specifically the stuff that Jesus died on.
I'm not positive I heard anything about pedophile networks. I don't think I heard anything about demons, the globalists secretly taking orders from trans-dimensional beings.
Right.
I heard nothing about the evil trans agenda.
Sure.
No explicit homophobia really stuck out to me. I mean, maybe some mild racism, but like it's Alex.
Yeah, you would expect
that. Yeah, it's kind of not too surprising.
I'm starting to think that maybe his wildest stuff now is not so much a view of what's outside so much as a reflection of what's happening to him.
That's very interesting.
I think you
would say that.
I'm not a trained psychologist.
Yep. Well, call Steve Pachenik, see what he thinks.
Will do.
So here, I don't care about this interview with William Jasper, except for the piece of information that comes from it that is really fascinating, that Alex is keenly aware that a lot of his ideas come from the John Birch Society.
Sure.
And that is where his political roots are.
Right, he knows that. Yeah.
He pretends it's not the case.
Right.
But, you know. So he's trying to sell things in this interview, too. Like, he wants to sell, books by Skousen.
Sure.
And he wants to sell Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley's book.
Okay.
That Alex believes lays out all the globalist machinations and all their plans. he makes a startling admission.
So he's trying to sell this book.
He has it for sale at InfoWars.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy Tragedy and Hope there.
It's a very large book.
It's 1,100 pages, something like that. Now, Alex makes a startling admission.
Okay.
This is in 2013. He's been on the air since 1995. So we're clocking in at, what is that, 18 years at this point?
You got it.
It's available at InfoWarsStore.com. And then Tragedy and Hope, that's, I don't know, 1,100 pages or so, that I see on William F. Jasper's bookshelf on Skype, if you're watching us on TV, where the Georgetown political science professor, Bill Clinton's mentor, who he thanked in a State of the Union, admits they control liberalism, fake conservatism, fascism, and the Trilateral Commission and all of it is meant to bring in world corporate government. And that it's only meant to look like there's the illusion of choice in politics. I'm paraphrasing quotes. This book, and I've actually read almost the whole thing. When I say that, I probably read 800 pages of it over the years. Because, I mean, I skip over some of the more little factoid inside baseball stuff.
Inside baseball stuff? What are we talking about?
This is supposed to be like the globalist inside master plan. Shouldn't you be mostly focused on the inside baseball
stuff? Listen, I'm not really a palace intrigue guy with the globalists.
Yeah.
I'm more of a hard information guy.
From my experience with Alex, this tells me he's read 4 pages of
maybe.
He hasn't read any of this book.
Get the fuck out of here. There's a lot of inside baseball.
Go fuck yourself. This reminds me of how I always acted about Infinite Jest.
Oh, yeah.
I've read most of it. That means I've read 20 pages, something like that. I don't know. I can't do it.
I think my favorite, the way I view about most of those books is Andy Daly is L. Ron Hubbard. Mm. Whenever he's like, and you're going to read something from your book. And he's like, I tried to read it and I could not make hide nor hair of it. Uh-huh. That's the way I've always treated those books. Like anytime.
But I always wanted to give the impression that I'd read more of it because I felt like it was something that I should have read. And so I always sort of acted like that.
Sure.
Whereas, Alex needs to have read all of this.
Yes.
There is no excuse why in 1995, Alex wouldn't read it twice.
Yeah.
There's no reason why he wouldn't study this thing like it's the Zapruder film in book form.
Right.
It's supposed to be the inside revelation of exactly what the globalists are, their plans, their histories, the most important book of all of these. And Alex, in 2013, is saying, I'm
almost there.
I might have skipped.
I'm going to get there.
I might have skipped a third of it.
800 pages over 18 years averages out to about 8 words per day.
This is unacceptable.
Maybe?
I mean, it's just
not even that.
It's just straight unacceptable. No. There's no way if you're giving this like facade that you're supposed to be given, if you're Alex, that you don't say, I've read every word of that book. Why would you? The only reason to say I've read 800 pages of it is because everyone knows you don't read shit.
Yeah, you're not
going to trying to make it more believable.
Yeah, 1,100 is unbelievable.
Yeah, you're trying to make your lie more believable by being like, I've read most of it. Much like me.
I'm a human being.
Infinite Jest.
Yeah, I'm a human being.
But the thing is, I'm admitting that I was lying about reading Infinite Jest. Alex is lying too.
What if one of those inside baseball passages is literally Carol Quigley being like, dude, I am totally fucking with somebody. I don't know who's going to read this book later on. That guy is fucked.
Yeah. So that was fun. I enjoyed that. That was a really bleak moment of confirmation for me about how much Alex is just making shit up.
I wonder if he's finished it.
I'm going to guess no.
Seven years on? I think he's got time.
I think he is not a reader at this point, and he is much less now.
Probably.
But we now get to the pièce de résistance of this episode, and that is Larry Klayman.
Hey, buddy.
Alex teases it at the beginning, and he pays it off at the end.
FreedomWatchUSA.org. Larry Klayman was the founder of Judicial Watch. I remember interviewing him back in the mid-90s, right to 2000. Then when Bush got in, he criticized and sued over unconstitutional activities there. And now he has really turned up the heat with Obama because it's just the orgy of constitution violations has become dictator level.
Yes, we're very concerned about
that. Even Mainline News is having to admit that. So he's a real trailblazer, and I'm very thankful but he was able to give us 10 minutes today. He joins us live.
Alex has to take scraps.
Ooh.
He has to take 10-minute scraps from Clayman.
Grateful to Larry Clayman.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He loved Larry Clayman back then, man. I already kind of knew this, but it's just fun to wallow around in the mud a little bit. But, like, the turn is serious.
It's stark.
It's like, I love this guy to the point where, I mean, he's in overdrive, too. So this is past when his show is supposed to end. This is past the 3-hour mark. So he's extending the show because Larry could give him 10 minutes.
Ooh.
Yeah, he loves it.
Oh, man.
But there's a reason. And that's because Larry recently got involved in a little bit of a lawsuit.
Sure.
It's one of the only times in his career that things have looked kind of good.
You could say that every day of his career. Well, he recently got involved in a little bit of a lawsuit.
But this one is one that, like, it you know how when, like, Ron Paul won a couple of the caucuses?
Sure.
It had the appearance that, like, huh.
The crazies were like, this is our chance, man. We're going to do it this time.
December 16th, 2013 was that day for Larry Clayman.
Here's the headline. CNN judge NSA domestic phone data mining unconstitutional. Who brought the case? Who won it? When everybody else has been failing, Larry Clayman. And then if you continue, Politico says Larry Clayman crows on NSA win. We hit the mother load. I'm glad he's proud of defending the Republic.
So Clayman had just won this lawsuit titled Clayman versus Obama, which resulted in a judge ruling that NSA bulk surveillance was unconstitutional. Nothing was done, however, because any kind of injunction was stayed on the assumption that the government would almost certainly appeal.
Yeah.
When this reached the circuit court, the decision was vacated because Clayman couldn't prove that his records were collected, which meant he didn't have standing to bring the complaint. He was the lawyer and the plaintiff.
I was hoping it was because he wrote most of that in a very overused crayon.
Larry added someone to the lawsuit who did theoretically have standing, but then in 2017, the district court dismissed the suit entirely. In 2019, the decision was reaffirmed, and it did not do anything.
Yeah, it didn't go anywhere.
No.
All right.
But also, that program that he was suing over was ended by the time
this was going on.
This is just him trying to get attention out of Snowden.
Yeah, he's trying to get some juice.
When Snowden came out with his revelations, Larry filed suit the next day. He's trying to ride that wave, basically. Yeah. And he got pretty lucky here in this 2013 verdict. Or this decision from the judge.
Mm-hmm.
But with all hindsight, it ultimately was meaningless, but looked really good, which is why Alex is forced to take his scraps.
Yeah.
Because Larry, at this point...
He's going everywhere.
If you're someone like Alex, at this point, you might have every reason to think, like, Larry fucking actually got one.
Yeah.
This could be huge.
We're on the ground floor of what's going to turn out to be the
And it ultimately was nothing.
No. Yeah.
Larry Clayman did nothing. He's an embarrassment. And in June 2020, he had his license to practice law suspended for 90 days, which unfortunately, Jordan, could get in the way of his $20 trillion lawsuit against China.
I don't think so.
Over COVID-19.
Yeah, he didn't lose his license to practice law in China. I'm sure that it can still work.
I have no idea. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. Anyway, here's Larry talking about, he's humble. He's staying grounded.
That doesn't sound right.
No, I'm not equating myself with Jesus Christ. Okay. I'm not in his league, obviously.
No, but I'm holding you up as somebody that took action and won.
All right. I love the idea that Larry is like, hey, I'm not comparing myself to Jesus Christ. But and then Alex is like, no, I'm holding you up as an example of someone who... Alex is pushing back on Larry not comparing himself to Jesus.
You know, it seems more egotistical and narcissistic to compare yourself to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad he didn't go with Rosa Parks here or Martin Luther King Jr. This is where they do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they take that shot where they're like, I'm going to steal Rosa Parks. Like, it's way more insane for them to try and steal Rosa Parks.
Sure.
Jesus didn't really do much, but
Wait a second.
He just died.
Wait a second.
Those miracles are fake.
It's a matter of perspective.
That guy just had some dirt in his eyes.
Okay, come on, man. I know you're on Lenny Bruce mode over here trying to take down
All right. Deities, I'm coming for him.
You're so edgy, Jordan, with your anti-religious material.
That's what I've been banking on.
Ugh. So I don't care about Larry's appearance much because it's just him being like, yeah, I'm pretty great. I'm pretty great.
One of those.
Yep. Like, and we're very excited to keep going, and we're going to take Obama out, and whatever. Yeah. It all didn't work out in hindsight. But there's one last clip, and that's just to really bring home the fun of Alex just loving Larry Klayman and knowing in the present day Larry is trying to destroy Alex and InfoWars.
They don't like him because he really believes in what he's doing. And none of us are perfect, but he really believes in what he's doing, and he's a good guy. Has a lot of courage.
That's what you say when someone is on the right team for you at the time.
He's a great guy. He's now, got a lot of courage.
Now let's
piece of shit. I hope he dies tomorrow. Yeah. Don't care. Don't care. Light him on fire.
Roger yelling at him in a deposition about the computers and where's the list, Larry? Larry just fucking going to town on him. So that brings us to the end of this. It was a really interesting thing to go into because it's so trivial in a lot of ways. Going back into this 2013 episode, there's like, it's mostly an infomercial for his supplements couched under the guise of, hey, the soil's bad.
Yeah.
And then you've got these weird interviews with his station guy from Chicago. Yeah. The John Birch weirdo,
right.
And Larry Klayman.
Boyle, Jasper, and Klayman.
Dubier.
Yeah, Dubier, that's it.
And so, but none of them rise to the level of, like, really interesting. Like, even the interview, like, the interview with Matt Dubiel, I just would scrap. Like, I don't care. I don't care about you doing interviews with someone who airs your show.
Yeah.
That's useless.
No, that's terrible.
The Anthony Gucciardi is like, this is just brokered programming, right. Basically, for your supplement line. The Jasper interview, you know, just fill in the blank with any conservative yelling about TPP.
Yeah.
It's not really that interesting. Mm-mm. And then Larry Klayman's just embarrassing.
This is...
But it's a nice retreat. It's a nice reprieve from the present day of Alex being a depressed husk of a person.
Calling for outright murder.
Well, and lying about things that have such a, like, real-world impact on our lives.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, maybe not actually, but the topics do. Like, we are living in a time that is, our lives are touched and affected by things like the Black Lives Matter protests.
Sure.
The conversation that's happening around those is really relevant, and it matters. The COVID-19 situation and whether or not people take things seriously and adhere to some limited measures, that's important. It's relevant. It touches our lives, and it becomes really difficult to have a show that's as lighthearted and fun as I want it to be a lot of the time, because it's like, hey, tomorrow, any number of people who listen to this show, someone might get hurt indirectly by something that we're talking about. Like, someone could get COVID-19, or someone could have a loved one who could get sick and maybe unfortunately have a difficult case. And it's really hard to not have that in your mind when we're hearing him lie about those sorts of topics. And so it can be kind of nice to look back on this time that has a little bit less stakes to it.
Totally. Man singing, talking about soil. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And you're still allowed to learn a little bit.
Totally.
Like, we can learn about the evolving understanding of nutrient deficiency in soils.
Totally.
Sure. So it's worth it.
Yeah. As far as the time capsule goes, it is both nice now to have the time capsule of look at us in the present looking back at 2013 and being like, oh, that's right. I remember the show that I signed up to cover, you know,
a little bit.
I signed up to cover weirdo John Birchers and soil takes
more or less.
And then in the future, maybe we'll get back to that.
Yeah. And it does make me realize that, you know, there should be more time. Being able to flash back a little bit is kind of restorative in some ways.
Yeah.
We'll do more. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Happy birthday, theoretically. I don't know if Robert's going to play this for you on your birthday, V, but if he does, happy birthday. And I'd like to say... thank you to Robert for, you know, being a fan of the show. We appreciate and allowing us to be overly maudlin, but to do this. This is very weird, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Happy 18th chalk mark on your cave wall.
Maybe.
It's nice to know that we can all celebrate that together.
The other thing I would say is sorry that, like, I think part of the idea that Robert had was that, you know, get a sense of what was going on the world on Fee's birthday.
Yeah.
And I don't think we know that.
No, that's not what we're here for.
I think from looking at Alex's show, we have very little idea what was going on in the world at the time.
None.
We know that Larry Klayman just won a case. That's about it. Sorry we can't provide more insight, but Alex doesn't always do a great job.
No matter.
Oh, also, Google has robots.
Google does have robots. No matter what era of Alex we're looking at, you're going to learn a lot more about an alternate present than you are about anything that has to do with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if you're listening in the present, we'll be back. It makes no sense to do plugs because by the time this episode is used for its proper purposes,
I assume we'll have taken over Google's robots and we'll be commanding.
But you have to assume Facebook and Twitter are going to be gone by then.
Sure, sure.
So, anyway, we'll see you next time here on the podcast. But until then, I'm a juicy ice cube.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.